Hello, this is Russell Moore, and you're listening to Signposts. A while back, one of my colleagues here at the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, Dan Darling, we were in an airport somewhere, and he mentioned an Amazon Prime streaming video pilot that had just come out called The Man in the High Castle. And so he's describing what this pilot is about. And he said, it's about a world where the Allies lose World War II. And so the United States is divided. Half of it is under the control of Imperial Japan, and half of it is under the control of the Nazis. He said, it's kind of dark. And I remember my response was to say, well, yeah, I think that pretty much is the epitome of dark. If you have a Nazi-controlled United States and a world under totalitarian dictatorships. But I went and watched the pilot at the time and was fascinated with it. And then when Amazon brought it forward as a full series, I ended up watching the series. And as I was watching it, there were several things that hit me. Of course, if you haven't seen this or if you haven't heard of this, and there'll be a few spoilers in here, so if you want to watch it, don't let me ruin it for you. Skip ahead with what I'm about to say right now. But you have Imperial Japan controlling the Pacific states. You have the Nazis controlling the East Coast. And then you have a strip of a neutral zone in the middle. And so the Man in the High Castle has all of these various people in both of these regimes. And the sort of mystery behind it all are these reels of newsreel that show the Allies winning World War II. So the message that's coming forward is there is a possibility of a different sort of world than the world that you're living in right now. And so as you go through the whole first season, people are wondering who is the man in the high castle and what is happening here. It ended in a kind of bizarre sort of way with one of the main characters just waking up in an alternative universe, which looks a lot like the 1960s of the United States of America, where he's looking around at billboards and so forth. And it's very clear that this is not a Nazi United States. And so I was sort of intrigued by this. I didn't really want to wait for the next season to find out how are all of these chords going to be brought together. So I went and read the book by Philip Dick. Of course, if you are not familiar with Philip Dick, his book, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, was made into the movie Blade Runner, and his short story, Minority Report, was made into the movie Minority Report. And what Philip Dick often is dealing with is the question of, can you be sure of the reality that you have? And that's something that has shown up in many films over the past 30 years, many films in American pop culture. You know, one can think of the Matrix movies. One can think of the Truman Show. One can think of the Adjustment Bureau just a few years ago. And so I read Philip Dick's book. It was remarkably different. There's some of the same characters, many of the same characters, but remarkably different narrative in the novel. You still have the basic plot structure, but there aren't films. There's a book that is detailing this alternative history of how the Allies defeated the Axis powers, and that is of great concern to the powers that be. But there's also in the book a great deal more attention to the I Ching, the ancient Chinese holy book, and spiritual matters, Eastern spiritual matters, show up quite a bit more in the book. It's one of the passages that I marked in my copy here was Mr. Tagomi, who is a Japanese official in the Pacific States. He says, "We are absurd because we live by a 5,000-year-old book. We set it questions as if it were alive. It is alive. As is the Christian Bible, many books are actually alive, not in metaphoric fashion. Spirit animates it, do you see? And so there's a spiritual, occultic sort of theme that makes its way all the way through the Man in the High Castle. Some reports suggest that Philip Dick actually wrote the Man in the High Castle, making decisions about plot points from the I Ching itself. Now, what intrigues me about this when it comes to the Man in the High Castle is that there is behind this an understanding of the possibility of alternative universes, of parallel universes, which is something that is of great debate right now in the scientific community. Do we live in a universe, one singular reality, or do we live in a universe among a multiverse of multiple universes with multiple realities, maybe even with their own laws of physics and so forth? And if that sounds just out of hand, ridiculous, and absurd, just remember that Copernicus sounded absurd. And certainly if you had tried to explain the theory of relativity or dark energy or some of the other things that we know about now, black holes, to people in previous eras, that would have sounded out of hand ridiculous too. So scientists are talking about, do we have multiverse? I think what's really behind this fascination is the understanding that very small decisions have consequences that are unpredictable. I mean, think of the Ray Bradbury story of the time travelers that go back in time and step on a butterfly and completely disrupt the entire history of the Earth. Well, there's a sense in which we all kind of feel that weight because we know that things are connected. And sometimes in our own personal lives, we can spend a lot of time looking backward and saying, if only I had done this instead of that, or if only she had done this instead of that, if only they had made this decision instead of that decision, that would have changed this, which would have changed that, which would have, in my whole life, could have been different. For some people, that's a kind of envy or a kind of a jealousy of a future that they think they're owed. And so it's, why didn't I do that? Why didn't I make that decision? I could have been where I want to be. Or a sense of regret. How could I have done that particular thing, and there's nothing I can do to go back and to change it now? That divorce or that ruptured friendship or that crime that I committed or whatever it is that's in the background of a mind, there's a sense in which those little decisions had great implications. And what if there is another alternative scenario out there? I can imagine it. What if it really exists? Well, I think as Christians, what we ought to think about in this is a sense of awe at the way that all of these little decisions come together. It's true that you think of even a great global event such as World War II, if decisions had been made differently, just a few points that could have set off a domino effect that perhaps could have led to a Nazi domination of the world. I think very few people could have conceived in 1941 of a Soviet near domination of the world, but that's certainly what we saw. And in our own lives, things could be different in ways that we might consider to be good for us, or in ways that might be catastrophic for us. I'm reminded of what Peter Kraft, the Christian apologist, said about Potiphar's wife. You remember the account of Joseph with Potiphar's wife. Joseph is Potiphar's wife attempts to seduce him, and Joseph rightly flees, and she lands him into prison because she tears the fabric of her coat. And so he ends up in prison. while he's in prison, that's where he starts interpreting dreams, which ultimately leads him to a place of authority, which is where we see him at the end of the book of Genesis. Kraft says, if you think about this a little bit, if you had not had the ripping of that coat, the scenario would not have played out the way that it did. So if Potiphar had a better tailor, then you would not have had Joseph rising to the level that he did in Egypt, which means that you would not have had Joseph able to summon his brothers back from the land of Canaan with the grain storage that he has in Egypt to prevent the children of Abraham from starving to death in Canaan during the great famine. So if you have the descendants of Abraham dying in Canaan in that famine, nobody would have noticed that across the world. But you would have had no King David, and you would have had no prophet Isaiah, and you would have had no people of Israel under the law of Moses. You would have had no Davidic line. You would have had no Joseph of Nazareth, and you would have had no birth of Jesus in Bethlehem, which means that you and I would be in hell right now. So, Graves argues, the entire salvation of the world was dependent upon that Egyptian tailor. Now, there's some real truth to that. I mean, the scripture tells us in Romans chapter 9 that it is through the people of Israel and that entire history that we have that God has brought forward the Christ who is the God blessed forever. And that's not only true in terms of redemptive history, it's also true in terms of your own life. Regardless of what you think about sovereignty and free will, that's another conversation for another time. But all Orthodox Christians believe that God is sovereign and that God is guiding history according to his purposes, and that God is working in your life in order to, Romans chapter 8, conform you into the image of Christ. And so there is an activity going on around you more mysterious than what you know or are able to see, more powerful than what you know or are able to see. And so the sense of, I think the allure of Man in the High Castle and all of the sort of alternative history that we see in popular culture, whether in novels or in films or in television shows, could things be otherwise? That can be an entertaining question to ask, but when it comes to our lives, I think it can be a very sobering question to ask. The Apostle Paul says, what do you have that you did not receive? And so if you received it, why do you brag as though you did not receive it? I think it can be a helpful exercise sometimes for us to think back and to think, what would my alternative reality be if I hadn't met that person who shared the gospel with me? Or what would my alternative reality be if I hadn't gone to that college with that campus ministry? Or what would my reality be if I hadn't walked into that church service the day that I did when I heard the gospel of Jesus Christ? And what would the reality be if the person who delivered that good news to me had been unfaithful in that? I think that's a humbling experience, and it's something that can cause us not only to sort of spend the diversion of tracking through all the possible alternative scenarios, but also to say, thank you, God, for sovereignty in finding me and reaching me with the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is Russell Moore, and you're listening to Signposts.